Hello and welcome to the Arizona Capital Times on SunSounds. My name is John Coe. I am in Flagstaff and I will be your volunteer reader for today, reading articles that were published in the Arizona Capital Times on or about December 13th, 2024. Headline: Colorado River Conference Mixed Bag for Arizona Water Officials. Written by Reagan Priest and published in the Arizona Capital Times on December 13, 2024. Arizona's water community left the annual Conference of Colorado River Users with mixed feelings about the future of negotiations on a new compact. Arizona Department of Water Resources Director Tom Bouchotsky and Central Arizona Project Board President Terry Goddard joined other water stakeholders from seven states at the annual Colorado River Water Users Association Conference. Tensions were high, according to media reports, and negotiators from Upper Basin and Lower Basin states traded barbs. The conference came as negotiations over the renewal of the Colorado River Compact, which is set to expire in 2026, are at a standstill. Goddard says he is, quote, more confident after the conference than he was going into the conference, but acknowledged that the conference was a mixed bag. Quote, I could see some very serious discussions taking place informally, person to person. The right people were talking, and if there's nothing else that comes out of that, that will be a major step, said Goddard. Bouchotsky, who is Arizona's chief negotiator for the Colorado River Compact, said he felt like not much had changed between the beginning and the end of the conference, and that there's still a lot of uncertainty surrounding negotiations. Upper Basin states and Lower Basin states are at an impasse over where cuts need to be made to ensure that all seven states will have enough water in the coming decades. The Upper Basin consists of Colorado, Wyoming, New Mexico, and Utah, while the Lower Basin includes Arizona, California, and Nevada. The Lower Basin states say that they have already made deep cuts to their water usage and would be willing to make more if the Upper Basin states make their fair share of cuts too. However, the Upper Basin states say that they have always used less water than their southern counterparts and are unwilling to make cuts to what they currently use. Goddard said the Upper Basin states' presentation during the Colorado Water River Users Association conference on their proposal for the river was very disorganized. Quote, that said a lot, because you really don't have a proposal except to say no, Goddard said. That was a pretty weak position, and I think that led immediately afterward to some very serious discussions as to how we could pull together, because they simply did not have structure that would take us into the next 20 years. Bouchotsky, along with representatives from California and Nevada, gave a presentation on the Lower Basin state's proposal and said he felt they did a credible job explaining what he called a middle-of-the-road proposal. Quote, I thought it was evident to everyone the wide divergence between upper and lower basins that was evidenced at CRWUA, Bouchotsky said. Bouchotsky and Goddard said that this year's CRWUA conference marked the first time in their memories that the seven states did not give a presentation on the state of the river together. Bouchotsky said this year's conference was planned by representatives of Upper Basin State Utah, and they decided not to put the two groups on a panel together. During the conference, a negotiator from California and a negotiator from Wyoming traded criticisms over the opposing plans for the river, according to media reports. California's negotiator, J.B. Hamby, accused the Upper Basin states of using their share of water to, quote, build pipelines to more golf courses. Wyoming's negotiator, Brandon Gebhardt, called the comment bullshit and called the leadership over rhetoric. The comments reflect the tensions that have led to some considerations for an alternative pathway to a deal. Bouchotsky and the Arizona Department of Water Resources have asked the governor's office for funding for a potential legal battle, while the Central Arizona Project voted last week to ask the federal government to explore the possibility of a compact call, referring to language in the original 1922 II Colorado River Agreement. Under a compact call, the Bureau of Reclamation would impose cuts on the Upper Basin on behalf of the Lower Basin. Goddard said the Central Arizona Projects Board vote on a compact call did cause a lot of conversation at the CRWUA conference and said it is a, quote, very real possibility in the future. Bouchotsky noted that the Lower Basin states' presentation at the conference highlighted just how dire a compact call would be for the Upper Basin compared to the proposal offered by the Lower Basin. Quote, the volume of water that Upper Basin would need to reduce under a compact call, from our perspective, was significantly larger than what we're asking them to reduce in a collaborative voluntary plan, and that has been lost, I think, in relation to what's on the table, Bouchotsky said. While entities like CAP are interested in a compact call if negotiations stay stalled, Governor Katie Hobbs would not comment on that or the possibility of a legal battle over the river. Quote, these are hypotheticals, Hobbs told the Arizona Capital Times on December 9th. At this point, we'll continue to move forward and work with the process as it unfolds. Despite the tensions, Hobbs said she feels, quote, good about negotiations continuing to move forward. She said Upper Basin states need to bring meaningful compromises to the table in order to make that happen. Quote, the Lower Basin cannot bear the brunt of any cuts that come, and we're going to continue to make that case and negotiate, Hobbs said. Goddard said he thinks the Lower Basin states need to keep all options open to ensure a deal is made because any agreement would need approval from Arizona's legislature and from Congress. Quote, we much prefer to have the seven states, as they have before, work it out without federal interference and without court interference, Goddard said, but we'd be foolish to ignore that when the other side refuses to come to the table under any circumstances, that legal action might be needed. He said the ideal timeline would see productive negotiations taking place throughout 2025 until a deal is reached, so that 2026, quote, is a time to wrap the package up and put a bow on it. While Bouchotsky and the ADWR are preparing for alternative possibilities, he agreed with Hobbs that they will continue to work within the usual process. Quote, the state of Arizona wants a negotiated outcome, Bouchotsky said. We do not want litigation. I know Governor Hobbs made a statement to that effect, so obviously I know what my marching orders are. Headline. Tax relief, renters gain, cities loss. Written by Howard Fisher for the Arizona Capital Times and published on December 13th, 2024. Arizona renters are in for a bit of a break in their monthly payments to landlords if the law works the way that it has been advertised. Effective January 1st, cities can no longer charge sales tax on residential rentals. While not all communities now have such a tax levy, Tucson, for example, does not, 75 of 91 cities in the state do at rates ranging from 1% to 4%. And what that means also means that, come January, the affected cities collectively will lose about $230 million a year. It's been a long time coming. In fact, Governor Katie Hobbs vetoed the first repeal the first time it came to her desk in 2023, saying that it suffered from defects. One of the biggest, she said, is that there is no, quote, enforceable mechanism to ensure that landlords who actually remit the tax to the cities actually will pass along the savings to their tenants rather than just continuing to collect the very same amount of money each month and pocketing the difference instead. Nor was the governor swayed by the fact that the measure had language that would have required landlords to reduce the rent by an amount equal to what they are no longer paying to cities in taxes. Hobbs claimed that even an attorney for lawmakers said that such a provision may not withstand a challenge under the state or federal constitutions. But by August, Hobbs had changed her mind. So what's different? The measure still has the same language as the version she vetoed about landlords being required to pass along the tax savings to tenants, but it also includes a provision that says if there's a civil suit, presumably filed by an unhappy tenant who believes he or she is being overcharged, the burden is now on the landlord to show that none of the rent being charged is attributable to the levy once the levy disappears. And then there's the timing. Acknowledging the concerns about the city's lost revenues, the 2023 law was designed with a delay to give communities a chance to figure out how to either make up the difference from other sources or to find places to cut their budgets. That's why the repeal doesn't take effect until the end of this year. And there was something else, a link to the whole debate over extension of the transit sales tax for Maricopa County. State law requires Maricopa County and only Maricopa County to get legislative approval to seek an extension of the half-cent levy that pays for roads and mass transit. Republican leaders confirmed that there was an understanding that if they approved allowing the tax extension to go to a public vote in a form acceptable to Hobbs, then she would sign the measure they wanted repealing the rental tax. The deal was made, and Prop 479 went to the ballot last month and was approved. What cities did not get, though, was some backfill by the state to compensate them for those lost revenues. That did not bother Senate Republicans when they pushed the legislation last year. At a press conference, several said that they believed cities were flush with cash and criticized them for not voluntarily eliminating the rental tax, something they said was necessary to help low-income renters during periods of high inflation. Quote, "This is money to help people put food on their table. Give them an extra tank of gas for the car," said Senate President Warren Peterson, a Republican from Gilbert, "and we are ready to provide relief." House Majority Whip Teresa Martinez, who has several cities in her district that are affected, acknowledged on Friday that voting for the 2023 legislation provided her with some heartburn. Quote, "On one hand, I don't believe the state should tell cities what to do," said the Casa Grande Republican, comparing it to the federal government dictating issues to the states. But, she said, that has to be weighed against the benefit to the tenants. And Martinez says she believes the bill, as finally approved, provides sufficient assurance that renters will get some relief and landlords will not simply pocket the difference. As to the effect on cities like Casa Grande, with an anticipated $1.2 million annual tax impact, Martinez said those lost revenues will have significant impacts. Quote, "But it didn't kill them," she said. Still, Martinez said that she remains open to having a conversation with the affected communities. You're listening to the Arizona Capital Times on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds of Arizona has been providing information access since 1979, and you can always listen to our live stream at sunsounds.org. Headline: Trump taps immigration hardliner Carrie Lake as head of Voice of America. President-elect Donald Trump said Wednesday that he's picking Carrie Lake as director of Voice of America, installing a staunch loyalist who ran unsuccessfully for Arizona governor and a Senate seat to head the congressionally funded broadcaster that provides independent news reporting around the world. Lake, an immigration hardliner, was a television news anchor in Phoenix for nearly three decades until she left in 2021 after making a series of controversial statements on social media, including sharing COVID misinformation during the pandemic. Telegenic, engaging, and adept at communicating, Lake launched her political career a short time later, quickly building a loyal following and national profile as she sparred with journalists and echoed Trump in her sharp criticism of what she called the fake news. In a statement, Trump said Lake would ultimately be appointed by and work closely with the head of the United States Agency for Global Media for his incoming administration, quote, "who I will announce soon," he said. He said Lake will, quote, "ensure that American values of freedom and liberty are broadcast around the world fairly and accurately, unlike the lies spread by the fake news media." The president-elect has in the past been a fierce critic of Voice of America, including saying in 2020 that, quote, "things they say are disgusting toward our country." The broadcaster drew additional criticism during Trump's first term for its coverage of the early days of the coronavirus pandemic, with a White House publication, the 1600 Daily Email Summary of News and Events, accusing it of using taxpayer money to, quote, "speak for authoritarian regimes." That was after the VOA covered the lifting of lockdowns in the Chinese city of Wuhan, where the virus first emerged. The VOA was founded during World War II, and its congressional charter requires it to present independent news and information to international audiences. It responded to Trump's criticism by defending its coverage. Upon taking office in January 2021, President Joe Biden's administration swiftly removed a number of senior officials aligned with Trump from the VOA and positions affiliated with it. Lake endeared herself to Trump through her dogmatic commitment to the falsehood that both she and Trump were the victims of election fraud. She has never acknowledged losing the gubernatorial race in Arizona and called herself the, quote, lawful governor in her 2023 book, Unafraid, Just Getting Started. Lake continued her unsuccessful fight in the courts to overturn it, and even after beginning her run for Senate, which she lost by an even higher margin last month, after trying to moderate her tone but struggling to keep consistent with her message on thorny topics, including election fraud and abortion. Trump nonetheless considered her for his vice presidential running mate before deciding on J.D. Vance. Also on Wednesday, Trump announced Leandro Rizzuto as his choice to be the United States ambassador to the Washington-based Organization of American States, and said he wanted Florida personal injury attorney Dan Newland to be his administration's ambassador to Colombia. He also picked Peter Lamelas, a physician and founder of one of Florida's largest urgent care companies, to be the United States ambassador to Argentina. Lamelas is also a large donor to the past campaigns of Trump and other Republicans. Headline: Mays sues Saudi farm over groundwater usage. Written by Howard Fisher and published in the Arizona Capital Times on December 11th, 2024. Attorney General Chris Mays is going to court with a largely untested legal theory in a bid to force a Saudi company to stop it from excessively pumping groundwater at its western Arizona alfalfa operations and require it to set aside funds to compensate neighbors that it has damaged. The lawsuit, filed on December 11th, claims that Fondo Monte LLC, an Arizona subsidiary of the company, has created a public nuisance by pumping so much water that it has dried up nearby wells and already resulted in subsidence of the land around Vicksburg in La Paz County. It also says that that's just the beginning, with the damage threatening sediment buildup that reduces water quality and damages appliances and pumps and pipes. The only thing is, Mays acknowledged, is that none of that pumping actually violates any state water laws. There are portions of the state that are within, quote, active management areas where pumping of groundwater is regulated. Pretty much everywhere else, including where Fondo Monte operates, is ungoverned by those laws, meaning that those on the property have the right to grow whatever they want and, more to the point, pump as much water as they need to grow those crops. Discussions at the Capitol about imposing new rules on these areas have broken down amid disputes over what regulations are appropriate, and Mays blames the problem here on, quote, legislative failure to address a water crisis with catastrophic effects on the groundwater level in the Ronagras Basin. That, she said, was the reason Fondo Monte came here to grow alfalfa to feed dairy cattle in Saudi Arabia, where such farming is banned. Quote, Fondo Monte is taking advantage of Arizona's failure to protect its precious groundwater resources, Mays said. And now the Attorney General wants Maricopa County Superior Court Judge Scott Minder to rule that statutory limits on pumping or not, what Fondo Monte is doing still violates the public nuisance provision of the state criminal code. Fondo Monte is already gearing up to fight the use of the nuisance law to curb what it says are otherwise legal operations. Quote, we believe the Attorney General is setting a dangerous precedent, attempting to penalize farming and the wider agricultural community within the state of Arizona, said spokesman Barrett Marson. The company complies with all state and local regulations, he said. But Mays isn't disputing that. Instead, the claim is that Fondo Monte's operations are harming its neighbors and, under Arizona state law, creating a nuisance. Quote, Arizona law is clear on this point. No company has the right to endanger an entire community's health and safety for its own gain, Mays said. The law is clear on that point. Marson, however, said the allegations are totally unfounded and said the company will fight the litigation. Arizona's nuisance law has two methods of enforcement. One makes it a Class II felony to maintain a public nuisance, but with the defendant being a limited liability company, jail time is off the table. That leaves a fine of $750 that would make no difference in a case like this. The other, though, allows her office to ask a court to enjoin the activity. That is precisely the order that she wants here, and a requirement for Fonda Monte to set up an abatement fund to reimburse others who have been affected. It will be up to a judge to decide whether the nuisance law fits what is happening here. There really is no precedent, however. The only known use of the law in a situation like this came earlier in May's tenure, where she cited it to go after a company's plan to start mining rock and gravel on a 25-acre parcel that it owned in a neighborhood in a rural area of Chino Valley. The site was within 100 feet of homes. State Mine Inspector Paul Marsh said at the time he had no choice under existing law but to approve the mining plan, so Mays, claiming a nuisance, got a court to issue a preliminary injunction. But there never was a final ruling on whether the mine was a nuisance or whether the nuisance law applied. The lawsuit went away after the company abandoned its plan after someone else bought it. In this case, Mays said, there is clear evidence of the effects of Fonda Monte's operations. Operating in the Rana Grass Basin since 2014, she said the company has multiple wells, each capable of pumping up to 4,000 gallons of water per minute. She said in 2023 alone, Fonda Monte used about 31,196 acre-feet of groundwater within the basin. That is considered enough to serve about 93,000 single-family homes. But the Arizona Attorney General said there are more immediate and visible consequences. Mays said that a well less than a mile from Fonda Monte's property went dry about 5 years ago. And again in late 2017, the same happened to a well for the Friendship Baptist Church about 1.8 miles away. Quote, the land is literally sinking in La Paz County, with as much as 9.8 inches of subsidence documented in the immediate vicinity of Fonda Monte's farms, she said. All this, said Mays, is enough to fit within the legal definition of public nuisance, even if the company isn't violating any other laws. If this lawsuit succeeds, it won't be the last, Mays said. Fonda Monte is not alone in what she believes are actions by other large corporate farms operating in the areas without pumping restrictions, and she has already set her next target in mind. Quote, Cochise County is being seriously damaged by the Riverview Dairy, she said, referring to the farm operating in the Wilcox Basin. The evidence of damage is just as strong, if not potentially stronger, than here, she said. Still, Mays said she is not arguing that the growing of alfalfa itself is a nuisance, acknowledging that it is grown throughout the state by many others, and that much of it is shipped overseas, including to China. She said the future of growing the water-intensive crop here is, quote, a question for the legislature. Mays said, however, that there is no excuse for lawmakers to so far have failed to take up the question as to how to regulate water use outside of the active management areas. Quote, they have been completely AWOL when it comes to addressing rural Arizona's water needs and these situations where people are being harmed, she said. The attorney general isn't the only one. La Paz County Supervisor Holly Irwin decried the lack of action by state lawmakers to place any restrictions on water use in her area. Quote, that is why we are seeing foreign companies come over to these areas, purchase land, and pump out water so that they can supplement their alfalfa and send it back home, said Irwin. Quote, Attorney General Chris Mays is the first one who has stepped up and done anything about this, said the Republican supervisor. I know my constituents will be thrilled that somebody's actually paying attention to the real problems here, which are that wells are going dry, the land is in subsidence as we've seen, and the concern that we have for the future for our basin is large. Efforts to address the problem have been stalled at the Capitol amid a dispute over not just whether regulation is needed, but who should determine any regulations. Irwin and other rural supervisors want both monitoring and conservation of groundwater, pointing out that farms don't have to report how much water they are pumping, but that has bumped up against agricultural interests who argue that in many cases they were here first, and even with the current targets being out of state and foreign firms, fear any potential state interference on their own operations as well. So far, the agricultural interests have won out. In fact, lawmakers have carved out special protections for them. For example, there is a state statute which says that agricultural operations that were around before surrounding residential developments are, quote, presumed to be reasonable and do not constitute a nuisance. Mays, however, said that doesn't apply, and not only because residents were there long before Fondo Monte started farming alfalfa and pumping groundwater in 2014. She also pointed out that the same law does not apply, quote, if the agricultural operation has a substantial adverse effect on public health and safety. And Mays, in her lawsuit, spoke to the exception, calling the excessive pumping injurious to health and even indecent because it interferes with the ability of people to enjoy their property. Republican lawmakers, anticipating last year what Mays was going to do, even tried to undermine her ability to sue. Senator Sine Kerr, Republican from Buckeye, added a provision to HB 2124 dealing with agricultural water use, which would be used to strip the Attorney General of the right to bring any sort of nuisance action at all, regardless of the reason. But the bill was vetoed by Governor Katie Hobbs. But the governor, in her veto message, made no specific mention of that change. Instead, she said lawmakers need to address water issues in a holistic manner rather than tinkering with water laws on a piecemeal basis. You've been listening to the Arizona Capital Times, a production of Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff. Once again, my name is John Coe. Thank you for listening.